Welcome to Killer Crawl Space. This is episode 51. I'm going to start it off with a corny joke. What if I told you could order a Taco Bell Strangler? It sounds hot, doesn't it? It's more than hot, it's deadly. But the Taco Bell Strangler was known as Henry Wallace, and of his mother, and his sister was 3 years older than him. Henry's father would leave once he found out she was pregnant with Henry, and he was a married school teacher, so I'm assuming he left to go back to his wife. Red's mother had lost her mother at a young age, and her father had left as well when she was, I don't know if it was when she was little or before she was born. But it was stated that Henry's mother would try to control Henry through violence and emotional abuse and other things. It seems no emotional support was provided, which, given his mother's, you know, situation, it seems with losing her mom and her dad walking out that she didn't really know how to show love to a child. Not saying that's the case here, but yeah. The house they grew up had no electricity and plumbing, and they would drink out of a well pump in the bathroom with a shed with a set of pots. And the house would consist of his great-grandmother, his mother, his sister, and also read his great-grandmother and mother did not get along very well. And I'm sure it was probably constant yelling in the household. Potty training seemed to be a very bad time for Henry, because if he had an accident, then all hell would break loose and he'd get severely in trouble. And it would be so bad that he would try to hide his underwear when he had an accident. His mother would have to work long hours, so she felt her children had to grow up fast. She would be very strict on the kids, and if she was too tired to spank them with the switch, she'd make them pick one out, and then she'd have Henry whip a sister or her whip him. They said, too, that like Henry did not like whipping his sister. It looks like Henry had even to wear his sister's clothes, like hand-me-down stuff. I'm assuming just pants, shorts, and shirts. Hopefully not like dresses and like short shorts. It seems one of his main chores was to clean out the pots that were used for the bathroom, but he never complained. It seemed like he was a pretty good kid, even despite, you know, everything he had to go through. While in school, he wanted a life like his friends, where they had a father and what seemed to be a loving home. And a lot of kids in a situation, I assume, usually go through that. Excuse me. In the sixth grade, in an unexpected phone call had happened. His father would call and say he would love to meet him, but he would never show, which would get Henry's hopes up, and this would affect him for a very long time, which is very understandable. In 1979, he would start high school, and he was liked by his fellow classmates, and his teacher didn't mind him either. And they thought he was a good kid, and he wasn't allowed to play football, so he became a cheerleader. He would be the only male on the team, but the girls loved him, though. After graduating in 1983, he would attend two colleges, but each only lasted for a semester, and it seems he wasn't motivated to pass and do well in college, and his passion was his DJ job at the local radio station. The listeners enjoyed his humor and his laid-back manner, and a lot of listeners also liked his voice as well. They said mostly the females did. He would eventually get fired in a short time because he'd get caught stealing the CDs, and this would lead him to join the Navy in 1984, and he would remain in the Navy. In the Navy, it seemed he was very well liked. He followed orders and accomplished his assignments in a timely manner, and he would eventually get promoted to a third petty officer, and it was said before he left service his achievements ranking was nearly perfect, and I'll explain more in a moment. During the Navy, he would marry a woman whom he had dated off and on since high school, and she had a child from another man, but it didn't bother Henry, though, and he'd end up adopting her. He would still want a child of his own, but she didn't want another one, and this would start to cause some problems in their marriage. Their sex life would dwindle. He'd blame on her being raped as a teenager, so I'm not sure if maybe the rape caused the child, you know, her having the other child. I'm not sure, but he'd suggest about getting some help by going to counseling. And this would not sit well with her. The year of 1992 would come and leave a big impact on Henry's life. In August, he would get in trouble for breaking and entering, or known as a B&E, near the Navy base. He would be asked to leave service, and since his record was great up until this, the Navy would allow him to leave on an honorable discharge. And his wife would leave him shortly after this, and with Henry down on his luck, he'd move back in with his mom and sister, who now lived in Charlotte, North Carolina. and he would date some other girls, even get one of them pregnant. The relationship would fail, but it didn't matter because he was happy to be a father, and his daughter would be born in September of 1993. Even though his life was falling down, his daughter was a bright spot for him. And the drugs he had experimented with at an early age would become a full problem. It would be his way to escape his problems as well. A lot of people do that. A lot of people seem to do, like I said, do this anymore. He would work at a few places, with one of them being Taco Bell as a manager, but nothing would ever last. And it seems like he didn't seem to care for anything. He had become what some people would label as a monster. I'm going to go into detail with each murder and when he actually confessed to the murder. So the timeline's going to jump because he was arrested in 94. And as you can tell, his daughter was born in 93. Well, I'm going to jump back to 92. So here on out, like I said, it's going to be about the victims. Excuse me. In June 1992, Caroline Love was living in an apartment with Sadie McKnight, who was dating Henry at the time, and she would finish her shift at Bojangles and head home after she had asked her manager if she could buy a roll of quarters to do laundry. A male cousin of hers would see her walk in and offered her a ride home. He would watch her enter the apartment. A few days later, Caroline's sister would receive a phone call from Bojangles because Caroline had not been at work in the past 2 days. Her sister would check the apartment and leave a note. The next day, she had been informed again that Caroline had not shown up for work. She would file a missing person report. Sorry about that. At the police station with Sadie and Henry. So Henry actually went and helped file out a missing person case. Well, report. The only other thing her sister noticed was some of the furniture had been moved a little bit and her bed sheets were gone. The investigation would come up with the roll of quarters were missing and she would not be found. So this is where it's going to jump. On March 13th, 1994, Henry would confess to the murder of Caroline, and he would state he had made a key from Sadie's key, and he had gone there when neither of them were at the apartment. He would hear Caroline come in, and he told her he was in the bathroom and would leave once he got out. Instead, he would come out and go to the living room where she was at. He'd kiss her on the cheek, and she would tell him that she wouldn't tell if he didn't do it again, and he'd end up putting his arms around her neck in a chokehold. And he said there was a fight because she was able to scratch his face and arms, but he held on until she passed out. And he would carry her to the bedroom and remove her clothes. He would have oral sex and sexual intercourse with her. I'm assuming during sex she would end up coming back from being passed out. And I've read he tied her hands behind her back with a curling iron cord, but also read he used it around her neck. So she would try to fight again, and either way he would strangle her until she died. And he didn't move in his car close to the stairwell, and he'd wrap her body in the bed sheet and placed her in a big orange bag he had grabbed from his car. And he put some of the clothes in a bag to make it appear she had left, and this is when he grabbed the roll of quarters. And he would drive around to find a place to dump her. Once he found the spot, he'd dump the bag along the side of the road in the woods, but the next day, out of fear, he'd go back thinking the bag would be noticeable. And he would remove her from the bag and place her in a shallow ravine, roughly in the same area. I guess he checked on her body to see how much she had decayed over the few days, and after a week she had become bones. She would never be found until he led investigators to the site after being confessed. Sorry, got a little tongue-tied there. So, going on to the next victim, Shauna Hawk. In 1993, Shauna was living with her mom, and she was in college and had worked at Taco Bell, where Henry was a manager at the time. On the 19th, her mom would come home to find her car gone, but her coat and purse was in the closet. But you know, this is February, so been probably a little chilly. She thought it was odd, like I said, since it was still cold out, and she would call Shauna's boyfriend to find out if he had seen her or heard from her, and he had not. She also learned that she was supposed to pick up her godson at daycare, and she failed to even do that. So when Shauna's mom investigated her purse, she found the keys were not there, and later it would be determined there would be money missing. And Shauna's murder, mother and boyfriend would call police to file a missing person report. And the thing that I wonder, though, is it seems her mom did not search for her through the house. My opinion on this comes from because the boyfriend would search the house, and he noticed it, you know, the shower curtain outside the tub, and when he pulled it back, he'd find Shauna under the water. You know, Mom might have just freaked out and just forgot, you know, thinking that she wasn't there, so why search the house? You know, it's very possible, you know, whatever. But they would call 911, and Shauna would be taken to the hospital, where they would confirm her dead. An autopsy would show some interesting things, a contusion on the left side of her head and a laceration on her left ear, and there was some hemorrhaging behind the eardrum that showed she took a blunt trauma prior to her death, and she had other hemorrhaging on her face and neck that would point to strangulation, and they believe the cord of some type was used. Henry would confess to the murder of Shauna after he was arrested. Like I said, this is where we jump in the future. He said he stopped at her house to talk for a while, and when he went to leave, he claimed she gave him a hug, and he told her he wanted to have sex with her, and he'd take off her clothes and have, you know, perform oral sex on him. They both have sex together, and he would say Shauna was scared and cried the whole time, which, you know, he's calling it sex, but, you know, it's rape, basically, what it is. So, of course, she's going to cry and be scared the whole entire time. You know, a dude that was her manager and probably she, you know, trusted her for a little bit, you know, doing this to her. But afterwards, you know, he would put her clothes back on, well, make her put her clothes back on, take her to the bathroom where he would choke her until she passed out. And he'd fill the tub up with water and place her in it. He did say he took money from her as well. Okay, now we're going on to the next victim. It's Audrey Spain. A few months would pass, but in June 1993, Audrey was 24 years old, and she lived in an apartment by herself. And on June 23rd, 1993, she was supposed to work the evening shift at Taco Bell. She did not show up. Her manager, which this time was not Henry, would drive by her apartment because he thought it was unusual for her not to show up, so I'm guessing she was a pretty dependable worker. But he'd see her car in the lot, and he'd try a car again, but still no answer. The next morning, he would do the same, but eventually would call her sister to tell her about Audrey not being at work. And she would not show up to the second shift either. So the manager would not get a call back from Audrey's sister, so he'd end up calling 911. And some officers would drive by, knock on Audrey's door. They wouldn't get an answer. But on the 25th of June, a maintenance man would enter the apartment through a sliding glass door, and he would find Audrey's body on the bed. The cause of death, again, would be strangulation. And Henry, like I said, jumping back in future, he did confess to the murder, and he claimed he went to her house to smoke some weed with her. And he said he went there to rob her, too, pretty much. And he would do this by putting her in a chokehold, trying to force her to tell him the code to the safe at Taco Bell. And she would claim she didn't know it. And he questioned her about her bank account, but she would tell him, you know, she had no money. And he would hold the chokehold on until she passed out. He would take her to the bedroom, have sex with her. He would then, you know, take her to the bathroom, wash off any evidence he could. And he'd place her on the bed, then tie her t-shirt and bra around her neck. And he would take her keys and a credit card, and he'd return to her apartment to make some phone calls so it not seem as though she had died the day he killed her. Okay, now we're going to the next victim. I'm not sure if I pronounced her name right. I'm going to say Valcia. It's V-A-L-E-N-C-I-A, Jumper. But shortly in August 1993, she would talk about meeting up with a friend later in the evening on the 9th. And she would not make that meetup, and her friend would go to her apartment the next morning, no smoke coming from her apartment. I'm assuming underneath the door or whatever, but he would say he turned the doorknob and noticed it was unlocked. And he did not want to go into the apartment because there's a lot of smoke in there. And he would notify a neighbor in the apartment building who would call the fire department. And the firefighters would arrive, and once they entered the kitchen, they saw a burner was left on. Most likely, this was the reason behind the fire, and they would find her body in the bedroom. Once an autopsy was performed, it learned she didn't die from inhaling smoke, but the doctor would rule it a thermal burns. And once Henry would confess to the murder after his arrest, the doctor would do another autopsy and state she died of strangulation. So, like I said, Henry would claim, like I said, jump back in the future, back to 94 after he was arrested. But Henry would claim she was like a sister to him, and they hung out a lot. So, the night he killed her, though, he would go to her house to call his girlfriend. Well, wanted her to call, I guess, his girlfriend, because he was arguing with her. And once she would reach for the phone to make the call, he would put her in a chokehold. And he'd lead her to the bedroom, where he would make her remove her clothes, have her perform oral sex on him, and then they'd have sex together. She'd put her clothes back on. He'd end up choking her with a towel. And he noticed her nose would start to bleed, so he kept the pressure on the towel until he no longer felt a pulse. And he'd clean everything down, and he felt he had touched, that he felt that he touched. And he would find some rum in the kitchen, and he'd go to her potty and pour it on top of her, the bed, and the floor. And he'd open a can of beans and pour them into a pot, then place the stove on high. And he'd take the battery out of the smoke detector. He'd go back to her body and light a match and throw it on her. That's just messed up. Like, and he would leave, return 20 minutes later, and saw smoke, and he'd leave again. And he'd also claim he had taken jewelry from her, but had pawned it off for some money. This would be to most likely feed his drug addiction that he had. Which I'm kind of wondering, like, if, I don't know what kind of apartment building this is, but you'd wonder if, like, they would know more about, you know, like a neighbor would notice the smoke. Maybe not. But going on to the next victim, Michelle Stinson, in September of 93 as well. Like, so most of these murders take place in 93 till towards the end. A girl by the name of Michelle was living in an apartment with her two young sons. A male friend of hers would come to her apartment on the 15th. He would knock, but she would not answer. And he'd hear the kids knocking on the window and yelling that their mother was asleep on the kitchen floor. He thought it was a joke and went to leave. One of the oldest boys would run out the back door and grab him. And he'd go into the apartment through the back door. And this is where he had found Michelle on the kitchen floor with blood around her. Excuse me. And he would try to use the phone, but noticed the cord had either been cut or pulled, I guess, completely apart from the wall. So he'd take the boys and go to a neighbor to use a phone to report Michelle's body. And an autopsy would show four stab wounds to the left side of her back. Two of the wounds had caused an injury to her heart and lung, which, you know, that was proved to be fatal. And strangulation was also a factor. But Henry would confess to the murder, like they're going back to the future, and he would even state that he went to Michelle's apartment, to rape and murder her. So he was basically going there this time to do the deed, which he probably was every time he went to all the other ones. But he'd go to the apartment around 11 p.m. It's pretty much the same story, like I said, of wanting sex, making her move her clothes. Michelle would tell him that she was sick, but he would not believe her and began choking her. She'd eventually agree to it. Like I said, same procedure, making her do oral sex on him. Then she said she did not know how to do it. So they'd have sex on the kitchen floor. He'd use a towel to strangle her. She'd gasp for air. And that was when he stabbed her. And the oldest son would wake up, and Henry would tell him to go back to bed. And Henry would clean up his fingerprints and throw the knife at her fence outside of her apartment. And Michelle was only 20 years old, so I'm assuming her kids were very young, so I couldn't imagine, you know, them waking up and seeing their mother on the floor. The next victim is Vanessa Mack. But in February 1994, Vanessa was living in an apartment with her daughter. And on the 20th, Vanessa's mom would come to pick up her granddaughter, and she arrived a little earlier than usual. But she was surprised to find the door was ajar. And she had yelled for Vanessa, but all was silent. Once she entered, she would notice her granddaughter, who was only a few months old, laying on the couch asleep, which was odd. And she could not find Vanessa anywhere, but when she took another look at the bedroom and the bed in Vanessa's bedroom, she realized that the gray bundle covers was not a bundle at all, but her daughter thrown partially dressed in a misshapen position across the mattress. And she noticed something was wrapped around her throat. And she said her skin looked gray and she was cold to the touch. But she would grab the baby and run to another apartment in the building to use her phone to call 911. But Henry would confess to the murder, and he said he had called her to see if she was home, but once she answered, he would hang up. He would go there and talk to her, and he said he was mostly there for money because he knew she worked and recently just received her income tax. Excuse me. And Vanessa would get up to get him something to drink, and that would be when Henry would attack her with a pillowcase he had brought with him. And he demanded her ATM card and the PIN number, and he ended up having sex with her, and he'd tell her, you know, she'd have to put the baby to bed, but he'd end up killing her. And according to him, he would check on the baby and stay until the baby went back to sleep. And once he left, he eventually tried to use the ATM card at several places, but learned quickly that she had given him the fake PIN number. So she got the last joke in on him. The next victim was Betty Baucom. It's B-A-U-C-O-M. But in March 1994, Betty lived in an apartment with her adopted daughter, and she was assistant manager at Bojangles, but on the 9th, she did not report to work. Nobody has heard from her, or nobody could get a hold of her. Her boss, another employee, would go to her apartment the next day because she had not reported to work again. And they'd end up calling the police to report her missing. An officer would go to the apartment, be let in by a maintenance man. He would discover her fully clothed, face down on her bed, and she had a towel twisted around her neck. She assumed she had been dead for over a day at least. And this time, though, Henry actually left the crime scene disturbed. And he usually kept track of everything and cleaned up. But this time he took the TV and a VCR, and the officers would notice this because the entertainment center was bare but had loose wires where, you know, the VCR and TV was connected. And Betty's car was missing, too. But Henry did confess to the murder and said he went to Betty's apartment to use her phone. They would talk for a while, but before he left, he'd put her in a chokehold. He demanded the alarm code to the Bojangles, keys, combination to the safe, and she'd eventually give it to him, but he'd let her go, and she'd question him about, you know, why did he do that to her, and he'd get upset and begin choking her again. And she did fight, though, by biting, scratching his shoulder, but they'd still have sex with her out of rage. And after that, he told her to put her clothes on, asked if she had any money. She'd give him money, and he'd finish killing her. And he did admit to selling the TV and the VCR for drugs, and he left her car in a parking lot because he felt the police were following him, and he said he wiped everything down beside the trunk lid, and I'm pretty sure they got the print off of the trunk later on after they arrested him. So, you know, if he thought the cops were on him, so, you know, he was kind of in a rush on things, I'd say. But the next murder is Brandy Henderson. Brandy lived in the same apartment where Betty lived. And Brandy lived with her boyfriend, their 10-month-old boy. Henry would kill her right after killing Betty, pretty much, in March of 94. And he was friends with Brandy's boyfriend. So that was how he was able to get in her apartment, by saying he was going to drop something off for him. But Henry said he would pretty much do the same, you know, routine by choking, demanding money, they'd have sex, but he'd still choke her until she died. He planned on stealing a few things, but her baby woke up. And he was crying. You know, Henry felt a neighbor would get upset, you know, so he couldn't risk being caught while trying to carry some stuff out. So, he claimed he tried to calm the baby down, but would eventually just end up wrapping a towel around his neck. You know, he didn't want to tie it tight, which, either way, it's still messed up. But, like I say, he didn't want to tie it tight, but it was just an attempt to make the baby, you know, quit crying, and this would allow him to be able to take off the TV and radio that he wanted to sell to buy drugs. Brandy's boyfriend, you know, would come home from work to find Brandy, and their baby boy, Brandy, was dead, but the baby was alive. From my understanding, the baby did have some trouble at first, but they thought that, you know, the baby suffered some brain trauma. Well, brain damage, but he seemed to recover, though, right after, pretty well. And like I said, I'm assuming he turned out fine. Same thing, you know, with this victim, Deborah Slaughter. He was arrested on March 13th, 1994, and this was before Deborah's body was found. But the police had done some interviews and learned a lot of the victims knew Henry. Even Brandy's boyfriend said Brandy would be visited by Henry a lot while he was at work. You know, Caroline was a roommate of Henry's girlfriend. Shauna worked for Taco Bell, and Henry was a manager. Same with Audrey. That Balcia was a friend of Henry's sister. Michelle would eat at Taco Bell a lot and talk to Henry. Vanessa, like I said, was a sister of one of his exes. Betty was a friend of Henry's girlfriend. Brandy, like I said, was earlier the girlfriend of one of Henry's friends. But back to Deborah, she lived in an apartment alone, and her mother would go to the apartment to return a picture she had taken a few days ago. And she thought Deborah was at work, and she had a key to the place, but realized it was unlocked. She would find Deborah laying on the floor. She would call 911. And Deborah's purse had been gone through, and a lot of the items inside were left on the floor. There was white fabric in her mouth and a towel wrapped around her throat. And she had several puncture wounds to her chest. And Henry would confess that he went to her apartment to use drugs with her. He'd become upset when she claimed she had no money to buy drugs, but she did. She said she had to make it last all week. And he'd ask her for a drink, and that's when he put the towel around her throat. She'd fall to the ground on her knees and realize Henry was probably the guy that killed, you know, Betty and Brandy in the nearby apartments. Same story would take place with, you know, removing clothes, oral sex. But Deborah would not do it. She told him to kill her instead. And he'd have sex with her. He'd have her put her clothes back on. That's when he wanted her to empty out her purse because he knew she carried a knife. And she would hand him the money she had, but he would hit her afterwards. And, you know, she'd begin screaming. He would tighten up the grip on the towel and try to sit on top of her leg so she'd stop kicking because he was afraid, you know, it was going to alert the neighbors with her kicking. Well, and screaming. And he'd end up stabbing her 20 times with her own knife and would wipe it clean afterwards. But he'd leave to buy cocaine, and he would even return to her house to smoke it in her own bathroom, which is so messed up. And before he left, he'd end up taking a coat, a hat, a butcher knife, but he'd throw them away, though. I wonder if maybe he used that as a disguise or something to walk out of her apartment. Like I said, I'm not sure. But it seems his motive was more for the sex aspect of it instead of robbery. Another thing I thought was weird, you know, Deborah was a friend of Henry's. And like I said, most serial killers usually don't target people close to them, but he did. And like I said, the police would interview Henry, and as you know, he eventually confessed all 9 murders. And they recorded his confession, listened to him tell, you know, the crimes he committed. And, you know, like I was saying, though, about the sex aspect of it, you know, it seemed like he really enjoyed the power and control. And, you know, the robbery really only fed his drug addiction that he had. But he would confess, you know, of killing a prostitute back in 92, but he did not know her name, and he supposedly dumped her near railroad tracks. I read there might have been more murders, but he was never charged with them, because they said something about a lady that he murdered in 1990. He would get charged for 9 accounts of murder and rape and sexual offense, assault with a deadly weapon, assault on a child under 12, robbery with a dangerous weapon, and his trial was delayed for various reasons. And it would finally happen on September 1996, and he'd be found guilty in January 1997, and he would receive 9 death sentences. And he would marry a former prison nurse in 1998, and from my understanding, he has tried to overturn his sentence, like they all do, but it has not worked yet. And as of right now, he still sits on death row, waiting for a date. But thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you on the next one.